This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
If you're going to last as a Man United player, you've got to rise above and learn, take it on your chin. And these boys, they have great character. They came back today as well. We know we could have done better first half. Second half, we were more like it.
That was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and this is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. But for the next hour, it is all things Red Devils, of course. A draw today in the Premier League with Aston Villa, going behind to a Jack Grealish goal. And what a goal it was, to be fair. Should have gone 2-0 down. I'm not having that offside. Not at all. His heel is not offside. Get a grip, VAR. Get a grip, professional football, for crying out loud. But of course, goals from Marcus Rashford. It was Marcus Rashford's goal. It was an own goal from Tom Heaton. And Victor Lindelof with a goal, of all people, to put United in the lead, but then losing that lead within 2 minutes. Tyrone Mings, who looked offside but wasn't offside, wasn't able to celebrate because of VAR. We won't get into all of that. What we will get into is the fact that it was Manchester United 2, Aston Villa 2. Here to discuss it all with me is Ben Senior. Hello, Ben.
Hello, mate. How are we?
Yeah, I'm okay. I guess I'm okay. The stats are out again, aren't they, as we keep hearing. That is 18 points in the Premier League this season for United. Their fewest after 14 games of a top-flight campaign since 88-89 this season. So, I mean, before it was 89-90, I think at 13 games it was something like the worst time since 89-90. Now it's the worst time since 88-89. I mean, what are your thoughts?
The records go on, don't they? No, I'm a bit fed up after that game. I mean, when United didn't win or that they had a bad result like that in the past, it used to ruin my weekend, and now I've just come to expect it. It's another game where we've just not really turned up. It's against, no offence to Aston Villa, but lower opposition. You know, new boys to the Premier League again. And we've just not put in a performance. That's 4 wins in 14 in the league. Mm. 8 points off top 4. And it doesn't look good for Solskjaer, for United, really.
Doesn't look good for Solskjaer. So what, are you suggesting that this could be one of the final nails in the coffin, Ben?
I mean, on this show, we've always tried to come in here and be positive, and we don't like calling for managers' heads, and I'm not going to sit in and say that Ollie should lose his job at all, because I think the problem's far bigger than him. But you look at the week we've got ahead, and I think today was a must-win game. We've got Spurs on Wednesday, and then it's the derby. So I feel like if we're talking this time again next week, I feel like he's under massive pressure if we don't get results in them two games.
It's fine margins, though, isn't it? Because you look at this week, which potentially should have been a victory, of course, in the lead. We saw the same thing last week as well. I mean, if you get 6 points out of those games, everything's okay. I know that that's not the way that football works. And, of course, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has come out and said that it's not a concern. It's not a concern to lose at home to Aston Villa. When you do look at the league table, and yes, it is 18 points after 14 games, when you do look at the fact that, you know, United have hardly won any games this season at all, let's just say that for crying out loud, you also look at the table. Tottenham are in fifth with 20 points. Villa are in 15th with 15 points. That's just 5 points difference. Everton are in 17th, just one spot above the relegation zone. They're in 14 points. Now, I know it's difficult to present that argument when Manchester United are sitting ninth in the Premier League, behind Sheffield United, behind Wolves, behind Spurs, who were in disarray until a couple of weeks ago, until a certain someone came in. I'm sure we'll get on to talking about him later on in the show. But, I mean, is it all doom and gloom? There were boos, actually, at Old Trafford this time, for the first time in a while. Sporadic boos, I suppose you could say. No one's really on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's back. But for the first time, we heard just a bit of discontent about fans within the ground.
I mean, fans shouldn't be booing. It should be a home game. It's out of order, that, a bit. But yeah, you mentioned that the league's a bit crazy. It is a bit tight. But when we're looking at teams like Burnley and Sheffield United that are in and around us and above us, it does worry you. And I think we're in real danger of just accepting this sort of mediocrity. And it seems like we're having a battle with Arsenal at the minute of which team can be the most mediocre. You know, sack the manager and then getting a former player, and it's sort of, we're trying to copy each other in a way. But yeah, that's the worry for me, is the way the club's being run, the way we're going about things, the way the results are going, and then what's said afterwards, is there's just a concern that we're sort of accepting it. We're going after the game. And the only thing I say with Solskjaer is, I have been a fan of him. I was one of the ones that was glad when he got the job permanently, and I did look at the new season and was optimistic about it and the players we got in. But you look at it and you think, after every game he's coming out, and it's always about the character. It's never, oh, we could have done that in tactics slightly more. And yes, football, when you're on the pitch, character comes in for quite a bit, but surely there's more than that. And sometimes after a press conference, I just want him to come out and just give me something for the next game a bit more. Because I'm looking ahead at Spurs, and I'm a little bit worried, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, it doesn't even bear thought that Manchester United could lose to a Jose Mourinho-led Tottenham Hotspur. We've got Ricky Sachs on the show from Last Word on Spurs later on. He is going to talk all about Jose Mourinho, and for me, the extravagant shift in agenda that there now seems to be towards Jose Mourinho. As Manchester United manager, highly disliked. Oh, God, we see right through all those tactics. As Spurs manager, great to see him back in the game. Look what he's doing with the ball boy. It is a staggering shift in agenda, and one that I'm not happy about. I'm not going to lie to you. Another thing I'm not overly happy about is United's defensive record now, because when you look at how things were at the start of the year, 3 consecutive clean sheets in the Premier League in February. Since then, just 2 in their last 25 games. That's 36 goals conceded.
I mean, last season, that was our big plus point, was the fact that we had a decent defence, and the fact that, okay, we said, oh, we need more options up front, but actually we've got this defence and we can keep clean sheets, and now we've not even got that. So you are worried when you look at that team. I know Lindelof scored today, and actually it was a decent header, but it's all right scoring at one end, but we've got to keep him out of the other end. And I don't know, there's a lot of things wrong that the club have done in the past, but how we managed to convince David De Gea to sign that new long-term contract, I think that was a stroke of luck, if anything else, because he is just saving us week after week again.
Yeah, in terms of today's performances, anybody in particular that stuck out for you in terms of having a good game, in terms of having a bad game? You know, you look at the Grealish goal, I think that maybe Andreas Pereira, let's not take anything away from Grealish, and you look at someone like Grealish, who would be quite an asset in a side like Manchester United at the moment. Villa fans would vilify me for saying that, but absolutely he is. I think he'll go on to be a star in the Premier League, to be honest. But you think that maybe Pereira could have done a little bit better there in trying to prevent Grealish even getting the strike. We saw the final goal from Tyrone Mings while those players were queuing up. To be fair, the others were potentially offside. Tyrone Mings not offside. Again, a huge VAR issue in the sense that he didn't even celebrate because he was like, this one could be ruled out. It wasn't. Of course, he scored. But for you, Fred, again, starting today, you look at that midfield and you see Pereira, you see Juan Mata, you see Fred, you see Daniel James. Again, for me, you look at the midfield again.
It looks weak. It does look weak. That centre of the midfield has been a real problem this season. We've said it, McTominay coming this season, and we've always been a massive fan of Scott McTominay, but we're out without him now and we can't cope. We get a couple of injuries to midfielders and the whole team's gone out the window. Fred and Pereira, where would you put them in a Premier League table of central midfielders? They're down there. I think they're very weak. I know Pereira got the assist for the Rashford goal, and it was actually a really good cross, but From what I've seen and what I've heard, he didn't really turn up today apart from that. So, yeah, you are worrying. And it's, you look at the midfield is a massive important part of that team when we're going against the likes of Villa at home, and we should be controlling that midfield. We should be coming in, playing our game and or having some authority in that centre of that pitch. But, yeah, Jack Grealish running the show today, I think, what can you say? It just says it all, really, doesn't it?
It does. With regards to, well, do you know what? Jack Grealish running the show, I don't think, he's a good player. And actually, when you look at that Villa starting lineup as well, you look at Grealish, you look at McGinn, you look at Hourihan, you look at Douglas Luiz, a former Manchester City player as well, and you think they've probably come to Old Trafford a bit like the old days and thought, right, we are going to show what we're made of here. And actually looked at United's midfield and thought, we can exploit that. That is another issue with United this season, is that everybody's coming to Old Trafford. We know that teams don't fear United like they used to, but it's almost even worse now because they truly believe they can get a victory. And that Villa midfield really overran United today.
Yeah, the fear factor is totally gone, hasn't it? We just don't have anyone in that midfield that can actually control a game, which is frightening, really. I know you say we've got some injuries, so McTominay, Pogba to come back, but we can't be relying on the odd player to change a game or act how we play. We just seem to have a team, but there's no style of play there going, right, okay. We seem to have a the tactics and the style of play when we go to a big game seems to be there, and we seem to be going, right, we'll go into them games counter-attacking football, we haven't got the quality, but we'll match them for everything else and energy. But when we come up against teams that we're expected to dominate, that's when we struggle, and that's when you've got to question what sort of tactics we're putting into place. Because, I mean, it's like we're trying to create this top four team, but we've got absolutely none of the ingredients to do so.
No. We have a striker now, though. And I think this is a positive aspect of today's game that we should take, because whilst the goal wasn't credited to Marcus Rashford, I'm giving it to him, purely for stats. Now, that would make it, from my records, 8 goals in the last 9 appearances in all competitions for Marcus Rashford. That is a striker. Manchester United now have a full-on, prolific goal scorer in Marcus Rashford.
He's in some red-hot form, isn't he? Yeah, I mean, we said when, I remember a few weeks back when we were on this show, when we were speaking, when Rashford was having a bit of a dry spell, and we were saying, nah, he just needs the confidence to come back and to get his head right and get the goals. And once he scores one, he'll go on a run, and he's done just that. I'm not saying we've predicted the future, but we haven't done so bad there. So I think Rashford, yeah, we have got positives. That the forward lineup, we've got some good players there, and we have got some good players in the team. But as a unit and as a squad, we've got a lot of weaknesses as well.
Yeah, and the squad as well. Before today's game, by the way, 25 years and 80 days, United had the youngest average starting 11 in the Premier League. We saw the youngest ever starting 11 for United in European, major European competition in Astana during the week. Yes, that didn't work out. United did take the lead. And great to see Jesse Lingard as captain, regardless of what people think of Jesse Lingard at the moment, regardless of their perception of him and everything that went on in the summer and his form at the moment. Clearly not what it was at the back end of the 2017-18 season, of course, when he went on to play incredibly well for England at the World Cup as well. I think to see a lad born and bred in Manchester and coming through the ranks and being captain of the club that he clearly loves is a great thing to see.
It's a good story, isn't it? And Jesse Lingard, where's he gone this season? That's the only thing. I think I'm a big fan of the fact he's a United lad. He's Manchester born and bred, and he's come through the academy, and he's scored some big goals from over the years, especially when you think about the FA Cup final and League Cup games as well. And he scored some big goals. You think about Arsenal away, he always used to score there. Called it the dance floor when he did his moonwalk and his Millie Rock. So,
it's what?
Is Millie Rock.
Okay.
Go on. So you've got to say that you've got some good memories of Jesse Lingard over the years, but he just seems to have just lost all sorts of confidence this season, and is in and out of the team. So it's a bit of a sad sight to see, because I think he has got the ability, and he used to be that player that would link up that midfield and attack that we have really been missing this season. So it's just a shame. You just want him to get that form back, but it's up to him if it's in the tank still.
It is. And just to finish on the goal scorers as well, Jamie Vardy today getting another one for Leicester. And when you look at what Leicester are doing at the moment, I think a lot of United fans are looking at, oh, crikey, that is the way that we used to play football. You look at the likes of Yuri Tielemans again, there looked so good again in midfield today for them. He has got 25 Premier League goals in 2019, right? That's 3 more than any other player. And I think the key thing for him is that he scored, just like Marcus Rashford is scoring a lot of goals at the moment. Vardy scored in his last 6 Premier League appearances. He scored 6 goals in 9 Premier League games against Everton. But the key thing here, he's only scored more against Arsenal and Liverpool. He scores in the big games. And that is what we need from United strikers now, to go on and start scoring in bigger games. Ben, your last final thoughts on today's game?
I think it just sums up where we're at the minute. I think you've mentioned Leicester there, and you look at teams around us that are doing well, and it's just a blueprint of what United should be, really. Just a well-run football club, and we're not at the minute. I said Solskjaer might be under pressure this time next week, and I don't think it's all his fault. I don't think he's a world-class manager, but I don't think a world-class manager would sort out Manchester United at this moment in time. I think it's just a state where we're at that, okay, we could be worse, and we're not doing that bad, but the way we're going, it just isn't set up for the future for us to go and win titles, win cups, and get back into the top four and get back to where we should be.
Okay, this is the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. We've got plenty more coming up.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, joined with by Ben Senior, as ever, joined by Ben Senior, massive Manchester United fan. A little deflated after today's 2-2 draw with Aston Villa, which we are going to reflect on a little bit more. And that game against Astana in the week, of course, a very young United side going out to Astana and losing 2-1, but putting in a relatively decent shift, you might think. A decent thing to see there from United. No problems for me, really, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer fielding that side. We're going to speak to Mark Flanagan, our Northwest correspondent, in a moment. But just very quickly, Ben, bit of trivia.
Go on, you love your facts, don't you?
Just very quickly. The last United player to score a Premier League hat-trick.
See, when you say this, I can't think of anyone in the current squad that's done that recently. So, go far as back as Van Persie, maybe?
Oh, he's pulled it out of the bag. Just flippantly just said it. Yeah, April 2013 against Aston Villa.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, the momentous.
Yep.
Momentous victory. Great hat-trick. Yeah, the one that came right over the top of his shoulder. Brilliant. Trademark Robin Van Persie. Right, Mark Flanagan, our Northwest correspondent, is on the line now. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm very good.
Very well. Well, that's great, mate. I'm glad you're good, because after today's 2-2 draw, I wasn't sure how you'd be feeling.
Oh, well, I've had a good day on so many other in so many other ways, which I won't bore the listeners with the mundaneness of them. But when you've got a big family and you do lots of little annoying jobs in and around watching lots of football, that can obviously improve your mood.
So today's result, Mark, what does that mean for you? Ben here has said that maybe now the pressure is starting to mount realistically on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. United taking the lead, of course, through Victor Lindelof's header. Aston Villa taking the lead through Jack Grealish, and then Tyrone Mings equalising just moments after United had taken that lead. What do you take from this draw today?
Ooh, difficult, because we've really got a pattern now, haven't we, of what's happening with United's season. I think after that run of 5 wins in 6, there were hopes that a big corner had been turned, but with what's happened against Sheffield United and now against Villa, it just feels that the structural problems all over the club from top to bottom are really coming home to roost. And obviously you and Ben were talking about the centre of midfield, and that's just sort of typifies how it's all kind of, you know, sort of gone wrong for United in terms of maintaining that preeminence when you're having to rely on Pereira and Fred. I know they've got injuries and they've Pogba and McTominay and Matic as well, whose injury seems to be lingering for a lot longer than lots of people thought, but that's another discussion. But yeah, so when you're relying on those two and you've got people like Garner in reserve, it's just the, you know, things are coming home to roost. You sell Herrera, you sell Fellaini, you know, Carrick retires a couple of seasons ago and none of them have been replaced. And the big hope, I think, going forward, my understanding is that they really do want Pogba to leave on the basis that they get a couple of players in, because the guy hasn't wanted to be at the club for 18 months. My understanding is that United are desperately, desperately keen on Odegaard, who is on loan at Sociedad. Unfortunately for United, he's probably playing too well. And he's, lots of scouts have been alerted to his fantastic form, because the Pogba deal with Real Madrid is complicated on a number of fronts, but partly because Zidane's in a difficult position and he's not on firm ground with his long-term future there. He's desperate to get Pogba. The problem is that Real Madrid aren't going to pay the money that United want, and the players that United would take in a deal, sort of exchange deal, Odegaard is top of the list, but Real Madrid are reluctant to obviously include him as part of the deal. And you know, some Odegaard and a Bruno Fernandes, or Odegaard and another really good central midfielder, would make a massive difference in January for United. I think that could really help transform their season. But I think that kind of transformational deal, which could happen, but can only happen with Pogba, just feels slightly a long way off. And it was, you know, you were talking before about how expectations have lowered. I just think people like Odegaard, and lots of talk about Sancho coming and Kai Havertz, are they going to come to United? Are they really going to come with the way things are going, when they've got their pick of the top clubs? That's the that's the sort of dilemma that United have got?
Massively. I think that's a huge issue now. And we've seen that, you know, splashing the cash isn't always the answer. It's interesting you mention Odegaard there. Of course, he's on loan at Real Sociedad this season and finally seeming to fulfil some of the potential that Real Madrid saw in him, to sign him as a 16-year-old. I think he's the youngest ever player to play for Real Madrid in La Liga. He's obviously doing very well at Sociedad. I think he got Player of the Month award earlier on this season. With regards to the potential swap deal, if you could call it that, between him and Paul Pogba, there is the fact that he's already been quite open about the fact that he wants to remain at Sociedad for another season, and Madrid seem quite happy with that as well. Do you think that Madrid, having gambled on this lad as a youngster and sticking with him for so long and finally starting to see the fruits of those labours, would then go, do you know what, we're now going to let you join Manchester United? I'm not entirely sure that would happen.
No, absolutely. I'm not saying that that's the case. I think, obviously, that's what United want to happen.
Yeah.
And Real Madrid want Pogba as long as Zidane is there. And it's just the $64,000 question for United is just how much Real Madrid want Pogba and what they're prepared to sacrifice. And that's what it comes down to. And you're right. It's just like I intimated before. He's almost playing too well now. And the only good thing for United from a technical point of view is that Real Madrid can recall him at any point. So the link, obviously, the Norwegian link with Ole is one that obviously United will hope is... will play a part. Is, you know, they've not worked together, but there is that link. But yeah, absolutely, it's so difficult for United to get the players that they want, and it becomes a vicious circle, doesn't it? You descend into mediocrity. You don't qualify for the Champions League again. You let people like Herrera go for free when what you wanted was more money. Yet you're prepared to pay De Gea nearly £400,000 a week. Yeah. Well, hold on a second. Well, you pay Herrera the money because you're going to have to spend $50 million to replace him anyway. So these are decisions that have been taken that are costing United now, and they're not Ollie's fault. They're not the management staff. It's the people above that have caused these problems, and it's, you know, Ollie's bearing the brunt.
Mark, you mentioned the players that we're after and the wages that we're spending at the minute. Do you think United can actually afford not to make Champions League football this season?
Well, they can, in terms of, if you're talking purely financially, obviously they're so powerful commercially and through everything else and the TV money, they will lose out in terms of 40, 50 million, and they'll lose out from the this kit deal, because if they don't qualify for 2 years on the trot, there's a penalty, which means they'll lose, I think it's 23 million a year. So you're talking about a loss of 60 million compared to being in the Champions League, which is an awful lot of money, but it's not going to mean United in financial problem. Obviously, the big issue is that United then have to overcompensate through wages, because they can't guarantee Champions League football, which is partly the reason they have the biggest wage bill in England, and I think it's the second biggest wage bill in world football, because they're having to overpay for players. And you look through the wage bill, and it's pretty shocking, actually. And that situation's only going to get worse as long as United stay mediocre.
I just want to touch on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's comments as well, Mark. I know that you weren't too happy with what he was saying last week, Ben. You alluded to it earlier about the fact that you weren't overly comfortable with what he was saying today. I think the sentence that stuck out for me was the fact he said, "Inconsistency will happen. In moments we played fantastic, and at times we were too open. We failed to control the game, but we can't do anything about that now." Well, I mean, I'm not quite sure how to take that one. That's very much it. Or, listen, it might have been at the end of the press conference and he was like, "I can't be bothered to talk anymore," but we can't do anything about that now. It's not a case of, all right, well, that game's gone, we move on. You kind of have to address why those things happened, why there was inconsistencies.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's doing that thing of trying to take the pressure off the players. He's trying not to overburden them with expectation. But you've also got the problem is that certain players will see that as a bit of a get out, and even if you're a top Premier League player and you drop off by 1 or 2%, and he's like, and so the players think, oh yeah, but he's not expecting us to dominate, he's not expecting us to do this, so we're doing all right, aren't we? Some players will take it, all players will react differently to what he said. But I think you've got to remember that what's most important 99% of the time is what he's saying to them in private, what he's saying to them on the training pitch. And what are you saying to them in terms of getting the players to play well? Because if you are a really, really good player, say you're a Marcus Rashford, and he's and Solskjaer's saying things and he's instructing people to do things and he's thinking, oh, that doesn't feel quite right. And he goes away with England and he sees everything clearer and the instructions are better and he'll think, hold on a second, my manager is not as good as this manager at England. And those little things are the things that feed into the players' minds, thinking, is this guy really know what he's talking about? Does he really know how to handle players at this level? And those are the issues, and that's where you get real problems in football teams when the players lose confidence in the manager.
Yep, indeed it is. And of course, you do have to look at the fact that the past two games have been against teams who came up from the Championship last season. Mm. Of course, 5 goals conceded in those two games. Mike, you're going to stay on with us because we are going to be turning our attentions to the derby with Manchester City next weekend.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
The Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beardall, with Ben Senior and Mark Flanagan joining us as well, our North West correspondent. Right, it's a big week. It is a big week for the Red Devils, of course, drawing today with Aston Villa. On Wednesday, they host Tottenham Hotspur, and a certain man who is now in charge of Tottenham Hotspur, we'll be talking about him in about 50 minutes or so with Ricky Sachs from The Last Word on Spurs. But after that game against Spurs, United travel to the Etihad in the Premier League. And yes, face a Manchester City side who are currently 11 points adrift of leaders Liverpool. Hey, we have to have some crumb of comfort so far in this season. Delighted to say on the line now is Colin Savage, Manchester City fan. How are you doing, Colin?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Great to have you on. A 2-2 draw for yourselves as well yesterday against Newcastle. Should have really won the game with a goal like that from Kevin De Bruyne, but obviously Jonjo Shelvey equalising for the Toon. What are your thoughts going into this derby? United, of course, with a not too bad record at the Etihad in recent seasons. Just one defeat in the last four.
Yeah, I mean, a derby, it's always a nervous game. But for the last few seasons, I don't think many City fans have been too worried, to be honest. We've been a far superior team. But this season, something's not clicking. And, of course, we've got a fair few injuries as well. Sergio Aguero, who normally does something against United, he won't be playing. Laporte is out, the centre of our defence, which has seemed to have made a huge difference. And I say, it's just something isn't clicking this season, which has been clicking the last couple of seasons. So, Derby's always nervous, but I think I'm less confident than I would have been this season or last season or the season before.
Colin, what are your thoughts on Pep, your manager? Obviously, over the past few seasons, he's been like the messiah to your club, and now things are just starting to go a little bit wrong, aren't they?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting one, that. I mean, there's I do have this theory, and I think other people have the theory, it's not unique to me, that managers have a lifespan. So a manager will come along for 3 or 4 seasons, do a great job, and then he'll have plateaued and gone. So there's some City fans asking that question. Not many, I have to say, but some City fans asking that question, has Pep plateaued? And he certainly doesn't seem to be able to get the performances out of the team that he's been getting the last couple of seasons. But I think also we're at a stage, I mean, people talk about United being in transition. We're very much, in a transitional phase. I'm just talking to my son over in the States. And we've let the old guard, David Silva, Vincent Kompany, Sergio Aguero, Fernandinho, all those great players are coming to the end of their careers, or have come, or are coming to the end of their City careers in the next couple of seasons. And in some ways, I don't think we've managed the transition very well. So I think this is a big test for Pep. And can he rebuild this City team? Because I think a lot of City fans now think, yeah, it does need a major rebuild.
Interesting thoughts there, Colin. A team in transition. What I would say from watching City recently, it does seem like if it doesn't come through Kevin De Bruyne, it doesn't come through anyone. He is pivotal to City at the moment. And if you take him out of the side, which is what we saw last season for large periods, and yes, City did win a successive title last season, but there was a period without Kevin De Bruyne when the team was struggling. You've got injuries, like you said, Sergio Aguero now out. Aymeric Laporte has been a massive loss in the middle of defence. If for any reason Kevin De Bruyne was to get a recurrence of that knee injury that kept him out for quite a while, I really think you'd see City drop even further than third in the table.
I think there's a point to what you say. He's an exceptional player. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And every side would love a Kevin De Bruyne. But there have been times when he's not played that well. I don't think, even this season, he rarely approached the level that he's approached in, say, last season, the season before. excuse me. But in previous seasons, we'd have had someone like David Silva, another exceptional player. Last season, Bernardo Silva was exceptional. So we could manage without Kevin De Bruyne because those two players would take the place. And behind them, we've got Ilkay Gundogan, another very good player. I don't think he gets a lot of stick from some City fans, but I think he's a much better player than many people credit him for. But this season, I think we are heavily reliant on Kevin De Bruyne. David Silva is looking a little bit like a man who's in his final season. He's winding down to next May when he'll do something else. He'll leave us and do something else. Bernardo's not hit the heights he hit last season. Rarely seen a decent performance out of him. So yeah, if it's not this season, if it's not going through De Bruyne, and even he's not at his best, then it's not happening for us.
Colin, it's been great having you. Oh, sorry, go on, Mark.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about Raheem Sterling, actually, just before he goes. He's obviously scoring goals, but his general play, he just seems to be a little bit off it. Is there any grumbles around the way Sterling kind of runs down blind alleys and gives the ball away a bit too often?
I mean, I don't want to seem like I'm running City down. We've still got an exceptional team.
You're on the Man United fan show, Colin. It's absolutely fine, mate. Yeah, <Colin.
laughs> But, I think there is something. Raheem Sterling is looking a bit like the Raheem Sterling of his first season, where he wasn't making good decisions. He has added goal scoring to his repertoire, but I think it's all part of this whole that, you know, our decision making is poor, our intensity is not as good, the speed of our play is not as good as it was. And I think there's despite United's troubles, and they've got plenty of troubles of their own, and I wouldn't really presume to comment on those, though I could spend all night doing so. I think United maybe will have some cause for optimism going into this game, but yeah, you never know in a derby.
You never know in a derby. Colin, thanks for joining us, buddy.
It's a pleasure.
That was Colin Savage, Manchester City fan there. Some interesting points. Raheem Sterling, who has got 15 Premier League goals, I think, this season. He thinks that he's maybe producing the form or reproducing the form that we saw from him in the first season. And a team in transition. Mark, we'll come to you in a second. But Ben, I just want to get your thoughts on that in particular. Also saying that you think David Silva's winding down.
I mean, I thought I was moaning a bit about United season. But if City are a team in transition, God help us. Yeah, I mean, Raheem Sterling, he was criticising David Silva, Gundogan. I mean, what we'd give for some players of that quality at the minute. But yeah, I think Colin, I mean, they've had a couple of bad results this season, but I don't think they've got much to worry about when they've got their side.
And interesting as well that he mentioned Pep Guardiola. Maybe he was questioning Pep's ability, really, to potentially rebuild this team. And maybe some City fans are suggesting that he does have a lifespan. We know with Pep, similar to Jose Mourinho, we saw it with his time at Bayern Munich, was only there for three seasons, which he agreed that he was already going to do, and then he left. Mark, for you, just with regards to the derby, I guess, one, what does it mean to you, the Manchester derby? Is it still as fierce as it used to be? I personally believe that it died down somewhat after Mancini left, for me. I think the Pellegrini era wasn't that fierce, to be honest. But what does it mean to you? And do you realistically think United have got a chance next weekend?
Just to very quickly say something about Pep as well that might have been lost a little bit. A couple of weeks ago, we went on a real long paying homage to Jack Grealish, about 90 seconds saying how brilliant Jack Grealish was. And then at the end said, but we couldn't afford him. And I sense there's a bit of frustration in Pep that some of the sort of top end players, they can't get that, you know, their transfer record is only, I think it's 60 million. I say only 60 million, but a lot less than their rivals.
Yeah, Riyad Mahrez.
So, yeah, there might be an element of that. But in terms of this game, I think the rivalry has always been obviously a bigger thing for City, hasn't it? It's always been more important for them because United and Liverpool has always been the game. And I still think that's as hot as it's ever been, even though that United are a long way off Liverpool at the moment. But yeah, I always think United have got a really good chance against the better teams, just because City will play in a certain way and will press, and they press as high as Liverpool do. And we know how well United did against Liverpool, because the one thing that United can do to hurt teams is that rapid transition with James and Rashford and Martial, and getting the ball forward quickly when they've got space because the other team have committed so many players forward. So against the better teams, I have less worries for United. It's the Newcastles and Southamptons and Palaces of this world is where the frustration comes. So I think United have got a fighting chance.
Do you really? Okay, well, that's positive. I like it. See, I like it, Mark. It's good. Ben, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Solskjaer's reign and there's a lot to criticise, but the games when we have played well has come against the bigger
Chelsea.
Sides. Yeah, you think of the Chelsea games. I know we go to that famous night in PSG, but it when we play big sides and we actually have more of a style of play, we go for counter-attacking football, we go with that five at the back with the wing-backs, and we actually seem to have some sort of direction. So, hey, who knows? We might just be good at playing big teams.
Yeah, a big game club. We just need the big game players to go with it, absolutely, as well. And speaking of one, Paul Pogba, potentially, Mark, before you go, we've talked about him a lot already, as we seem to do every single week on the United Fans Show, but Paul Pogba potentially returning against Spurs. Scott McTominay, he might be back. You look elsewhere in the squad, Diogo Dalot on his way back, Eric Bailly on his way back. So it would seem that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to have that strength in depth that maybe he hasn't had since the start of the season.
Absolutely. And if you want Pogba to play in any game this season, it's Tottenham. For the obviously the Mourinho factor, if there's one game, he his heart isn't in it, but my goodness, he will be up for that to prove Mr. Mourinho wrong. So yeah, that would be perfect timing.
Do you know what, Mark? We'll keep you on, because I feel like you've got a lot to say about Jose Mourinho, just like me. This is the Manchester United Fan Show. We're going to be speaking to Ricky Sachs on The Last Word on Spurs as well. I'm sure he'll have plenty to say about Mourinho too.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Yep, opposition view time here on the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. We've got about 12 minutes to go. Now, Manchester United host a certain Tottenham Hotspur on Wednesday night, and that means Jose Mourinho will be returning to Old Trafford, a team who sacked him, of course, last season after he collected 26 points from his first 17 games. After today, for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that is 18 from 14. We're not going to read anything into those stats whatsoever, but we are going to comment on the fact that Jose has a 100% record since he went to Spurs, both in domestic competition and European competition, of course. Ricky Sachs is on the line now, a Love Sport regular, of course, from The Last Word on Spurs and our Spurs Fan Show. Ricky, Jose Mourinho, talk to me.
He's doing very well at the moment, isn't he? Saying all the right things, we're playing some really good football and we're getting results. I think, three wins on the bounce with some real style in them. Obviously, we're conceding goals, but I would rather look on the positives that we're scoring lots of goals. And also the fact that we've qualified for the Champions League knockout stages. We're up to that top 6-7 now in the Premier League, and we've really closed the gap just to 6 points on the top four. It's been a really positive start from Jose. He's refreshed the place. The team looks reinvigorated, so I can't complain. It's been a really good start from Jose Mourinho's reign so far at the club.
Ricky, I mean, what you've described there, it's not too dissimilar to when Jose first came in at United, and it was quite good at the start, but then it did sour like really badly towards the end. How long do you see this going? Is it just a honeymoon period, or has Jose got it in him to lead the Spurs team on this season?
Well, I think for me, listen, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know if I see the problem as like a longevity one, but I think for Spurs, the most important thing is to attract a man and to bring a man in that can deliver trophies for the club. I think we've been so desperate to see this club win silverware that I think the most important thing is to be put onto that pathway. And I think Mourinho, wherever he's been, look at his track record, whatever country, whatever the league, the man has delivered. And Tottenham just need to get on that trophy haul, because you just do feel when his squad has won one, they'll have that winning feeling to be able to do it again and again. And if even Mourinho is not around in the 5, 6 year, 7 year period to oversee the club, I think if he can just set them on that journey, this could be exactly what Tottenham Hotspur need. I would love Mourinho to be there, don't get me wrong, long term. But looking back at his time with yourselves and with Real Madrid and even Inter, he's not a manager that seems to stay longer than 3 seasons. So I think we're realistic about it. It's an appointment that we believe is going to bring us some success, and we're waiting and we're craving for that success.
Ricky, no needle here whatsoever, but it does appear from my end that there seems to be a staggering shift, in a sense, in the Spurs narrative slightly. Now, absolutely correct me if I'm wrong here, and this might not be the view that you had, but from a lot of my Spurs supporting mates, I said, you know, a couple of years ago that Pochettino should go all out, just go all out to try and win the Carabao Cup, go all out to try and win the FA Cup. And the response I always got was, what? No chance. No, it's all about the Champions League. That's all we care about. Now, whether Pochettino didn't prioritise those or not, that's up for debate. But it now seems like those same Spurs supporting mates that I had are very much like, it'll win us a trophy. We're going to win the Carabao Cup. Like, the narrative has completely changed. And I kind of feel like that's a bit unfair on Pochettino, and part of the influence that Mourinho and the mind games and the almost the hypnotic sense of Mourinho coming into a club seems to have.
I don't want to sit here and speak bad of Mauricio Pochettino, because he's the man that laid the foundations of the club, and without him, there's no way the club would have been able to attract a manager in the calibre of Jose Mourinho. But what I will say is that in every big game under Mauricio Pochettino, the club fails to get over that line. You look at FA Cup semi-finals, Champions League final. Spurs just seem to have that issue when it came to a big game or trying to get over that final hurdle. We never seem to do it. And a lot of it was tactical nouns, I felt. I think with Mourinho, you're getting a man that is ruthless. He is loyal to some degree, but he will pick the players that are best suited to win the game. I think towards the end of Mauricio's reign, he relied too much on the loyalty of his relationship with some of those players. I think that's what ultimately cost him his job. And for me, listen, I think Pochettino's going to go on to manage clubs and do great things. But I think for Tottenham now, it was bringing in someone that has that CV of winning trophies. And this man that we've got now in place has got the ability, with the squads that he works with, to be able to deliver those big trophies that Tottenham are craving. And I do think with Mourinho, he will take the FA Cup seriously. He will genuinely believe that the squad he's got, he can win the Champions League with his Tottenham squad. You might laugh, but I'm telling you, he'll believe it in his heart, because from what he's seen in his last three games, he's galvanised the place. Ali is playing really well. Son is playing well. My God, even Sissoko's scoring. So that shows you anything is possible at the moment. He wouldn't have taken this job if he didn't feel in his heart of hearts that he can achieve good things and great things with his Tottenham squad.
Ricky, I mean, you sound like you work for Mourinho's PR team at the minute, but you mentioned a lot about winning titles and him getting Spurs to win them trophies. What actual is a realistic expectation for Spurs to win this season?
I think the most important thing is to consolidate top four again. I think for Spurs, with the stadium they've got, the infrastructure, they have to get top four for the cost of that stadium. It's so imperative for them. So that will be absolutely key for him to get into the top four. And hopefully FA Cup or a run in the Champions League will be great. But I think for him, it's about building blocks now ahead of next season. I think there's a lot of positives to focus on. And, you know, he's getting the best out of some players again. As I mentioned, Dele Alli and Heung-Min Son, and now Alderweireld and Vertonghen are looking back to their old selves to some degree. So there's a lot of positives at the moment. I don't need to have a look too much at the negatives. Obviously, it's a big game on Wednesday night against yourselves. I think United's form is really, really concerning if you're a United fan, just by the way you're playing. And no disrespect to me, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that appointment to me, it never really made sense over a long period, because you look at what he's won as a manager. Although he had a great career at United as a player, I just fail to see how he commands that respect in the dressing room. And my biggest concern with Tottenham is, what kind of a problem are we getting? We're getting a man that's come into that dressing room, he's already commanded the respect from what he's won. And I'm hoping, if it's short-term or whatever it's going to be, I can see that these players are buying into that philosophy because of the man and what he's achieved in the game.
Ricky, it's been great having you on, mate. Just before you go, a quick score prediction.
I'm going to say 3-1 Tottenham. I do honestly believe Spurs have got the capabilities we showed last season at Old Trafford to go there and get a really convincing result. So I've got no interfere at all. 3-1 Tottenham, Harry Kane to score a brace.
Lovely. Thanks for coming on, boss.
Thank you, chaps. Take care.
Cheers, Ricky.
Wow. Like Ricky, lovely lad, always on Love Sport, brilliant bloke, some great insight into Spurs and everything around the club. But when I talked about that staggering shift in narrative, I feel like he's one of the fans that's been indoctrinated. And I just worry. Mark, I'm going to come to you on this. Your feelings on Jose Mourinho being the Spurs boss. And for me, that shift in narrative, it's really hit home for me. And I mentioned this at the top of the show, that when he was United boss, it was seemed like Mourinho, he's done, he's stale. Everything that he tried is gone now. It's outmoded. We can see right through all his tactics, all his mind games, everything that he does, it's so transparent. He's now Spurs boss, and we're seeing him do stuff with the ball boys. We're seeing him shake their hands and congratulate them with goals and little comments that he's making. And I allude to those Spurs supporting mates that I've got again as well. They're all like, oh, it's great, isn't it? You can just love what Mourinho's doing, getting people on side. It just seems that because it seems like Jose Mourinho, the Spurs manager, is viewed in a completely different way from Jose Mourinho, the Manchester United manager.
Yeah, where's he got his happy pills from? I want some.
Yeah.
He's reborn, isn't he? He's like Jose Porto. I mean, a couple of things about Spurs and Mourinho. I think the important thing to remember about Spurs is and their fans is, for if you look back over the Premier League, they haven't been Premier League, you know, Champions League regulars. They haven't, probably for the majority of the last sort of 25 years, they've been a 6th, 7th, 8th place club, and some seasons even lower. So when your Spurs mates have been saying, oh, we just want to get Champions League, that is like winning a cup for them, because it's taking them to another level on a wage bill that's half of United's. And I think part of the reason for me that Mourinho is so happy, and apparently he turned down 12 million from Real Madrid to go to Spurs because Real Madrid wanted to keep him as an option in case they got rid of Zidane, is because he's gone to a club who've got a great record in recruiting players. I mean, that's 9/10 of the law in football. He sees a club who've bought brilliantly, sold well, and he's gone from a club who've done the complete opposite. And I think that's the confidence that he's got with through Daniel Levy and the scouting team at Spurs. And compared to the shambles at United, and I think those two sort of that comparison is the almost the most important one. And yes, you're right about United. Obviously, the expectation at United is so great, and that's where the winning trophies comes in. But at the end of the day, if you haven't got it right at the top, and I think Spurs illustrate that almost better than anyone.
Mark, it's been great having you on, as always, mate. I'm sure we'll speak to you next week. Yeah, so Ben, we'll finish on Spurs and the City game. I guess your two predictions. I can't get over this Jose Mourinho Spurs chat, to be honest. I'm slightly concerned about everything that's come out, and Mark made some great points there as well. You don't want to see people fail in life, but I just really hope it doesn't work out for Jose Mourinho and Spurs. Your predictions on the two games?
Spurs, I mean, that's going to be a massive game for, I think, how Ollie's week's going to go and how our season might go. I think it'll be tight, but I think we could come out with that with a draw, and then City again, I think. I'm looking at it, I'm thinking two possible draws, or we might get a win somewhere. But I can see us playing better against a big side, but can I see us winning? I'm not sure. I'd like to be hopeful, but I'm saying 2 points from two.
2 points from two. We can only hope here on the Manchester United Fans Show on Love Sport. Like we said, games with Spurs and City in the next 7 days. 2-2 with Aston Villa today. 3-3 with Sheffield United last week. They need a victory. We'll see you next Sunday at 9 p.m.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.